Ring the bell, sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and elsewhere on the internet, and I, Matt Wilson, also of ComicsAlliance.com and also of elsewhere on the internet, we watch movies and beat them up, and you may have noticed a little hesitation in my Ring the Bell Sucker this time around. And that is because we are watching a movie that, Chris, I think it's safe to say we're both a little wary of, a little hesitant about, a little unsure about. We're going to be watching the 1970 movie, widely considered one of the worst movies of all time, Myra Breckinridge.
I am apprehensive, I think, is the word. This is not a movie I had heard of before. This is one of our listener suggestions, or rather listener demands. We are forced to do this. I want to clarify that we are being held against our will to watch this movie.
I'm looking up who is to blame for this right now.
So the only thing that I know about it is what it says on the Netflix sleeve, and it is worrisome. Here's what it says. Gore Vidal's controversial, taboo-shattering, razor-sharp, satirical novel becomes a movie many didn't think it was possible to film. Myron Breckinridge travels to Europe to undergo a sex change and comes back to America as the sexy, man-hating Myra. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, this is... Look, I'm going to be 100% straight up with everybody right now. This is subject matter that I don't want to deal with, and I don't think this movie's going to handle very well.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. We, in our other podcast, we cover comics and pop culture. As you probably know, we probably have a pretty solid overlap of listeners between War Rock and Ajax and Movie Fighters. And we talked extensively about a recent issue of Batgirl that dealt with some themes about transgender people in a way that a lot of readers found offensive. That was 2014. This is 1970.
Yes. Now,
I am terrified of what we're going to have to talk about with this.
The backer who made us watch this is Robert Kelly.
Senator Kelly from the X-Men?
I know
I've made that joke before.
The other joke is that he's R. Kelly. Here are the listeners' suggested movies that we've watched so far. We watched The Secret of the Sword, the He-Man movie, which was terrible. Bad but inoffensive. Just boring, right?
Yeah.
We watched Short Circuit 2, which was terrible and pretty offensive. Racist.
Yeah, that movie had some really inadvisable casting issues.
Yes.
Notably that a non-Indian man was playing an Indian man, requiring him to have brown makeup on.
But it
literal brown face.
It wasn't hard to talk about. It was reasonably easy to talk about. We watched Inframan, which was very fun. We watched Gun Crazy, which we enjoyed quite a bit.
That was the shocker.
So I'd say our percentage of, you know, backer-forced movies has been pretty all right. This is the one we have been dreading. Let me just give you a quick rundown of some of the reviews of this movie.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Time Magazine said, Myra Breckinridge is an insult to intelligence and an affront to sensibility and an abomination to the eye.
Okay.
Writing in the Miami News, Herb Kelly wrote, I now nominate Myra Breckinridge as the worst movie ever made. Nothing can touch it for tastelessness and boredom.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Gore Vidal, who wrote the novel that this movie is based on.
Oh boy.
Disowned it, calling it an awful joke. Now, the novel itself is considered to be rather progressive. A rather progressive look at gender and sexuality and those kinds of issues. It is from the perspective of Myron, who becomes Myra, written as a diary.
Okay.
It is a well-regarded book, at least at the time that it was written. It was well-regarded, which was the late 60s. He disowned this movie. Here are some other worrying facts. The White House made the studio remove a clip from a Shirley Temple movie from this movie.
Wait, like the president?
The White House press people made them take a clip from a Shirley Temple movie out of this movie because at the time this movie was released, Shirley Temple was an ambassador. And it was going to... They were worried it was going to damage her credibility just to have a clip of a movie she was in decades previously.
As a child star.
Yes. That is how bad people thought this movie was.
Oh, boy. Now, like, the one thing I am hoping, the one thing I think that I think both of us are praying for is that since this movie has been described as, like, an affront to the sensibilities, that's, like, the sensibilities of, like, late 60s, early 70s America. The mainstream America. And that maybe, hoping against hope, that the movie was ahead of its time in how it treated its subject matter. I do not think that will be the case.
My main hope is that this is just the most ridiculous, like that it's so ridiculous that we can't possibly take it seriously.
In any fashion. My main hope is that it's only 94 minutes long and hopefully there's like a 10-minute opening and closing credits.
I have a sense that our one high point may be that it is not 2 hours. The other notable thing about this movie that we'll just get out of the way really quickly is that it is Mae West's first movie in like a quarter of a century. She had not been in a movie since, you know, 1955.
She actually has top billing ahead of Raquel Welch.
It would have had to been 1945. I had my math wrong there. So this was the first movie she had made since then. And this is it. This is the movie. So.
Heavy sighs. Let's do it, Matt.
We can't put it off any longer. We're going to have to sit down and kick off 2015 on Movie Fighters.
Now, I mentioned that I got this movie on disc from Netflix, so it is available on DVD, but I don't believe it's streaming anywhere. If anyone, for whatever reason, I don't think anyone watches along with us on these.
To my knowledge, there is nowhere to stream this. Even on Amazon, it is not available for streaming. The only way to buy it on Amazon is on DVD. So, unless you are willing to grab it on DVD, you're out of luck for watching this movie with us. You may just want to hear us grumble through having to talk about what happens in it after we come back from this musical interlude. Are back.
But Matt, I don't mean to cut you off, but fuck this movie and fuck everyone involved in this movie. Fuck Rex Reed, fuck Raquel Welch, fuck Michael Sarn. I am so angry right now.
Interesting note about the director of this movie, Michael Sarn. He was apparently working at a pizza restaurant not long after this. It is something that Gore Vidal cited as a sign that there is justice in the world.
I got so mad that I disconnected my headphones, so I don't know what you said.
Our listeners will, though. I do have to give it to Robert Kelly. I believe King of Fighters has been unseated.
Do you believe in miracles?
As the worst movie we have watched for Movie Fighters. because this was the most atrociously terrible movie. This, and here's the thing.
It's the new low. It's the new low.
It was not terrible in the way we expected it to be terrible.
No, it wasn't. Like, there's, okay, there's good news and bad news, all right? The good news is that Myra being transgender has virtually nothing to do with the plot outside of the fact that she is a very stereotypical predatory rapist and that she is a cartoonish caricature of feminism. That's all the good news.
Yes.
The bad news is everything else about this movie.
It is confusing. It is alternately extremely confusing, boring. It reminds you of better entertainments. None of its plots connect in any meaningful way.
I don't understand anything that happened in this movie. I don't understand what this movie was about and what it was trying to accomplish.
It's a good two-thirds filler. Like, we can knock out talking about plot stuff in this movie in, like, 10 minutes.
Oh, easily. Easily. Do you want to just talk about the plot real quick?
I feel like we should talk about, like, the three or four separate plots that are going on, because
let's establish the plot before we get into this fucking awful movie.
None of them really connect together. The inciting incident. We open on a scene where Myron...
No, we're going to have to talk about that opening later, because I want to talk about that opening for about a half hour.
Okay, we'll come back to that. But
here's the plot.
We'll say in brief... that Myron gets a sex change and becomes Myra.
Myron gets a sex change in Copenhagen.
Yes.
And becomes Myra. Returns to the United States and starts to go after her uncle's fortune, I guess? His real estate?
He was a star of Westerns. His name is Uncle Buck.
Buck Loner,
yes,
by the
Buck
way.
Loner. And he's played by John Huston.
Now, Matt, if our listeners are not familiar, who is John Huston?
John Huston was the director of many, many classic Western films, for one thing. The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. The Misfits he directed. Not just Westerns. He directed The Maltese Falcon. He directed The Asphalt Jungle. He directed The Man Who Would Be King. Classics! He directed classic movies. He was also the villain in one of what's considered to be one of the greatest films of all time 4 years after this, Chinatown.
Yeah, I just want to go ahead and point out, this motherfucker directed The Maltese Falcon.
Yes, he plays Uncle Buck in this, and to give him a little credit, I don't think his performance is bad.
No, I think he's atrocious.
But I think he plays the role as it was intended. But the fact that he didn't, speak up at any point during the making of this movie and say, listen, Michael, this is the worst movie. We have to stop.
Yeah, there is no way that there were just not Scarface-sized mountains of cocaine just out of frame in every scene of this movie. And I know that's a cliche, and I know that's especially cliche about movies in the 70s, but there's no fucking way that anyone involved in this was not out of their mind on coke.
The 70s...
Coke minimum, by the way. I'm going to put coke at the entry level of the reasoning for the performances in this movie.
What's crazy is that the 70s are considered, this golden time, this amazing time for artistic, director-driven cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
That this movie didn't end movies is amazing, but we got sidetracked. Okay.
Yeah, so she goes to Uncle Buck, who's running an acting school.
She's trying to take over.
That has almost nothing to do with the plot.
She's trying to take over his acting school. Here's what she does.
She says in the opening that half of it will be mine.
Yes, she says that she has a claim to half of it because she was married to Myron, because Myron is dead, and she was his wife, that she has a legal claim to half of this acting school, which means that she gets $800,000 or thereabouts. Now, Buck Lohner does not want to give this up, so a legal battle ensues.
Does it?
Yes.
Does a legal battle ensue?
Very slowly. There are several scenes of them just talking about whether or not they own it. He comes along and says, there's no proof that you got married. She says, we got married in Mexico. Then he hires a lawyer and brings a lawyer in who's like a goofy, silly character. The lawyer says that no one witnessed the wedding, so they can't, you know, they can't say that they were really married. She brings in a dental psychiatrist who is played by the actor who was Harry Mudd on Star Trek to say that he was a witness to the wedding. After that, there's like a scene.
Which, by the way, like in that same scene, she's just like, because that happens, because, okay, the plot about her trying to take over the acting school slash get her $800,000 or whatever is relevant in the first 10 minutes and the last 2 minutes of the movie and maybe 5 minutes in between.
Yeah.
So, like, the scene where Harry Mudd comes in as the dental psychiatrist is also the scene where she reveals that she was Myron.
Yes, and the reason that she has to do that is that one of the attorneys, or the attorney, gets a phone call that says there's no proof that Myron is dead. So she gets up on the desk, lifts up her skirt, and says, well, I'm a Myron.
Which I don't, like, okay, which doesn't make sense, because what is she showing?
She's post-op at this point. Right?
The first thing that happens in this movie is that John Carradine cuts off Myron's penis with a meat cleaver. So what is she showing them?
I don't know.
Okay, so that's plot number one.
She gets her $1 million. Yeah, that's plot number one. Plot number two is that in the acting school, she has worked her way with Uncle Buck into teaching a posture class. Like, as part of that, she has said, I want to teach a posture class and make $1,000 a month. And Uncle Buck says, okay. In the course of teaching her posture class, she meets these two students who are named Rusty Gadowski, who is played by Roger Heron, who is an actor who never did anything else after this.
Understandable.
Even though he looks exactly like Froggy Fresh, which is the one thing that was refreshing about this movie.
But like a 6'1" Froggy Fresh.
Yeah, but he talks the same as Froggy Fresh. He looks like Froggy Fresh with longer hair. It's kind of great.
I wonder if he's Froggy Fresh's dad.
I had that thought as well. That's kind of disturbing, though. I'd rather he not be.
So the other student is Marianne Pringle, who you may know as Farrah Fawcett.
Yes, it did not ruin her career somehow.
Astonishingly.
Farrah Fawcett went on.
There's a reason why it would have ruined his career and not ruined hers.
That's true. Farrah Fawcett went on to many other things. So, she meets these students and decides that Rusty is going to become her example of American masculinity.
Right, because Myra, in a conversation with Myron, reveals that her goal is to destroy traditional masculinity and save the world, which is what she says her motivation is, and then Myron says that's bullshit. And folks, if you're wondering how Myra is having a conversation with Myron, good fucking luck.
Yeah.
With the rest of this movie.
Myra and Myron are presented as two separate characters.
They have a sex scene at one point.
I don't fucking know what's happening with that.
So, now, Matt, how is she going to destroy Rusty's masculinity?
Over the course of several
days. I mean, there's a shorter
days,
answer.
Well, she rapes him with a strap-on penis.
Yes. Yes.
That happens.
Although, I read the IMDb trivia, and apparently the scene where Raquel Welch appears to put on a strap-on, she's actually putting on a gun belt with a six-shooter in it. You just can't see it because it's out of frame.
Okay. Whatever.
But yeah, there is a rape scene where the star of our movie rapes a man.
And rides him like Slim Pickens rides the bomb in Dr. Strangelove.
Like spanking him with a cowboy hat.
It's a direct homage to Dr. Strangelove.
Is it really?
It's gotta be.
Like, okay, because there's a lot of atomic bomb explosion in this movie. Now, Matt, if we can pull back the curtain for a second. At the end of this movie, when the credits finally started rolling, and do you folks remember what we said about how I was hoping for like a long credit sequence? The credits start rolling with 1 minute and 8 seconds left in this movie.
I mean, to be fair, there's a long opening credits, but...
Oof, I don't know. That opening credits is hard to get through. I was so mad. Like, I was fists clenched wanting to talk about this movie. Matt, you had to go do something for about 10 minutes. Yeah. So while you were gone, I started listening to the director commentary. I started the movie over and started listening to the director commentary. Obviously, I only got a few minutes in, but I got to the part where the first use of atomic bomb footage happens. And Michael Sarn says that he was asked by the producers why he put atomic bomb footage in this movie, and his response was, "The devil made me do it."
I'm shocked they got him back to do that commentary. Because as far as I know,
his busy schedule.
Well, he must have taken a day off at the pizza restaurant where he worked. That's where he sincerely was working after he made this movie.
Yeah, but not. I mean, by the time he was an actor in the 21st century, like he gets some roles in movies and TV series. Starting, you know, in the 90s and the 2000s. I do not doubt that he went back to the pizza place after this movie, though.
So he had to do 20 years of penance.
Yes.
After this movie. Fair enough. The longer story with Rusty is that Raquel Welch, Myra, takes him aside and takes him on as a special student because he walks a little strange. He broke his ribs at a rodeo? Something like that.
I remember the discussion about his broken ribs. I do not remember what the only thing I remember from that scene is where she wants him to take his shirt off so she can predator on him. And he's like, "Why do you want me to take my shirt off? All my ribs that was broken are inside me."
Yes. I believe
and
he
response
was.
Is, I know where your ribs are.
I believe the story was that he was a bull rider and he broke his ribs at a rodeo. He walks a little funny because of his broken ribs. So she takes him aside and is going to like teach him posture, which involves him coming up to like her apartment/office, and in more than one scene, her making him take his shirt off and his other clothes. The first time, her just kind of looking at him. The second time, her raping him with a strap-on. Also going on with his plot is a thing where Myra is trying to make Mae West his talent agent. Mae West is a character named Leticia Van Allen. Her whole shtick is that she's a talent agent whose clients are all men that she sleeps with.
Yeah, and she will have sex with like 10 dudes a day?
Something like that.
That's impressive.
Her entire thing is she looks at the camera, and she talks like this.
She does a bad Mae West impression.
"Hey, I'm Mae West. What are you doing?"
Because she hadn't been in movies for 25 years, and then would not be in another movie for another 7.
"What are you doing, boys? Come on over here."
Now, here's a quick question, Matt, while we're still explaining this plot. Did you feel bad for Mae West?
She was a little sad. There's a scene where she does a musical number.
Yeah, because she's also, in addition to being a talent agent, which is established many times and is the closest thing that this movie has to being a driving plot, she's also a world-famous singer.
Yes, and in her scene where she sings, her first song is performed just sitting down.
She's laying in a palanquin.
Yes, she's just laying down and kind of talk singing. Then she stands up and walks around and sings a version of Let Me Light Your Candle that is awful. That
it's
is
so bad.
Flat out awful. She is not singing to the tune. She's just talk singing. It's sort of an early rep.
It's so like the musical number on an episode of Pink Lady and Jeff.
The dancers,
it's so network TV.
The music. Dancers behind her are working so hard to make it even the slightest bit entertaining.
Well, they have to give the illusion of motion because all Mae West does is like stand there.
Hey, baby, let me light your candle.
It's so bad. I did not realize that song was that old either.
Rusty gets signed to her, and that's the last we see of him.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, like, essentially, Myra, this is the impression that I got, and maybe it's wrong, because I'll admit, like, this movie's hard to watch in a way that I just, like, I was ready to tap out 2 minutes in.
Yeah.
And by half an hour in, I was just spaced.
Yeah.
I was just spaced the fuck out. But my impression of what happens is that Myra attempts to destroy his manhood by raping him and then basically sells him.
Yeah.
To,
I mean,
like,
she has obviously,
Mae West.
She has obviously broken his spirit. Because he leaves her office/apartment, like
slash medical laboratory.
Yes, he like buttons up his shirt very slowly, and then just looks over at her and goes, "Can I go now?"
It's
and she says, "Yes."
It's the worst.
Yeah,
and I think this is meant to be a comedy.
I think you're meant to like celebrate him being destroyed, but. He's not that bad of a guy. Like, at one point, Farrah Fawcett even says, like, he's not a macho jerk like so many other dudes.
He does use some gay slurs.
Yeah,
every now and
other
then.
Male character in this movie does that, though.
Literally every character in the movie does that. But, like, yeah, I don't, like, I'm not sure if we're... Are we supposed to feel bad for him? Or are we supposed to be happy that... is it supposed to matter? Like, again, I think this movie is meant to be a comedy. Isn't
I think
it?
So. I did... we weren't laughing. I can tell you
I mean,
that right now.
I mean, it's meant to... Like, it's clearly meant to be a satire. But the satire is...
We'll get to
fucking
that.
Garbage.
We'll get to it. Like, we're doing plot now. We'll get to, like... intent and sort of the feel of the movie
okay.
after we get through plot.
So that's the second plot.
After she deals with Rusty, Myra moves on to Farrah Fawcett / Marianne Pringle.
Because that is the, she says that is the culmination of the plan.
Yes, she's destroyed men. Now she's out to dominate both sexes. But all that really ends up happening with that is Raquel Welch and Farrah Fawcett laying in bed together, and Raquel Welch trying to feel her up. And listen, that sounds like it should be entertaining. Yet this movie makes it super boring. We were sitting here watching Raquel Welch and Farrah Fawcett laying in bed together.
Spooning,
Raquel Welch trying to feel her up, and going, be over! Just... I want this movie to be over. How did they pull that off?
It's mind-boggling. There is so much in this movie that you would think would at least be visually interesting, because it's very much shot in a way where, in like, it sounds like it would be interesting, right? Like, there's a shot that's just like Myra and Rusty's. The pelvises, essentially, like the shot, the frame is their pelvises. It's their bathroom areas, but like it's not visually interesting at all. Like there's a party full of naked ladies that is not visually interesting at all.
It's just boring. Everything looks so boring. And everything that tries to look interesting ends up just being ugly or just like a bad shot.
There's a bunch of jump cuts and smash cuts, and they're not interesting. There's a bunch of there's kind of a recurring motif in this movie is that it will cut to classic cinema, because one of Myra's more annoying personality traits, aside from being a predator and a rapist, is that she is obsessed with old Hollywood. She doesn't think, you know, they make good movies or music anymore, which, again, is that a thing we're supposed to sympathize with? Because like they were getting ready to make some really good movies in the 70s, and they had just made some pretty good music.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll get to a little more about the jump cuts in a minute.
But yeah, all the cuts to, like, the Laurel and Hardy movies and stuff, that they are half the film. That might be an exaggeration, but they are, like, legit a quarter of the movie, right?
They're a lot of it.
But they're not interesting. It's just like, oh, we could be watching a Laurel and Hardy movie right now and probably be having a much better time.
Yeah. And even, like, more about the jump cuts in a little bit and the visual terribleness of this movie, because we're going to talk about that opening scene at length. But, that's the extent of the plot. She ruins Rusty. She takes over her uncle's acting school. And, like, does anything else actually happen?
No, I mean, like, here's what's telling. The Myra Breckinridge page on Wikipedia for the film does not have a section on the plot.
You know, it does not.
There's not even a section, which means that our questions about the end of the film cannot be answered.
Okay, the end of the film. After Myra takes over her uncle's acting school, she starts walking around on the street, and we see Myron driving a car. She steps in front of the car that he's driving.
Now, and this is just after the scene in which she has claimed that Myron died in a car accident.
Right.
Before she reveals that she was Myron.
So Myron, the first time, slams on the brakes and doesn't hit her. Then she circles around, the car comes around, she steps in front of that same car again. The car hits her. She goes flying up into the air and is an obvious dummy. And, like, falls to the ground, seemingly dead.
It is some super Dave Osborne shit.
While a bunch of people, including what looked like Tor.
It looked like either Tor Johnson or Karnov.
Yes.
From the NES.
So a bunch of people, like, stand around and look down. Cut to a black and white hospital, which looks like a military hospital, where a guy who I don't really know who he's supposed to be is walking around checking in on patients. He walks up to Myron, who is back to being Myron, and talks to him about some movie stuff. They kind of talk about movies for a second. And then Myron looks over, and there's a magazine cover with, like, three or four pictures of Raquel Welch on it.
Which are labeled Raquel Welch, new star.
Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Now, I went and looked at the page for the novel. And apparently what happens is that Myra is hit by the car. But due to the injuries and her stay in the hospital, she's no longer taking hormones, and they have to remove her breast implants due to her injuries. And so Myron lives as a man from then on and settles down with Farrah Fawcett's character. That's what it says in the Wikipedia page for the book. In the movie, it comes off as a thing where you have no idea what happened. Like, was it all a dream? Which is where I got really mad.
Yeah. The description of what happens in the book sounds so much better.
And it doesn't sound good, though. It doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good. But it even, like, there's a setup for it in the movie. where Farrah Fawcett says, "If only you were a man," to Myra, right?
It's like that episode of King of the Hill where Bill pretends to be gay to get a job at a hair salon.
Yes, it's exactly like that. But the end of this movie is nonsense. And yeah, so
the whole movie is nonsense.
So much of the rest of this movie is nonsense. As we said, so much of it is cutaways. And the cutaways...
We should say, that's the entirety of the plot, by the way.
Yeah, that's it. The cutaways are so much of the movie, and sometimes they're there to punctuate jokes, right? Like, the notion is that you'll see a gag about Laurel and Hardy carrying around a huge slab of wood, and that's a joke that's sex, right?
Well, it's a joke about how big Rusty's penis is.
Yeah. So a lot of, like, the cutaways are just like, then they had sex. Here's some old footage of an old movie. Jokes, right? Some of them don't make any sense at all. Like, in the very first scene where Myra is talking to Uncle Buck, there are several cutaways to buildings exploding. And I don't know why.
Well, it's when he hears the name Breckenridge, and he realizes that she's there for her half of the fortune. That one actually made sense, but all the other cutaways in that scene of just dudes getting shot in westerns, while Uncle Buck, by the way, is riding on a stuffed horse for the duration of that scene.
That's and then he falls off, but I guess they couldn't get John Huston to actually fall off a horse, so they cut away to...
They point the camera at Raquel Welch and shake it.
Yeah, and they cut away to some old footage of somebody falling off a horse.
It's not, none of it makes sense. None of it makes any sense.
This is from Wikipedia. Some 1940s and 50s era film actors who appeared in Myra Breckinridge were upset that footage from their old films were inserted into the movie to punctuate some of the gags and the film's climactic rape sequence. But if I had not yet watched this movie, I would have thought, well, they were probably just being a little uptight about it. No, I would be fucking furious if my face was in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is, like, this... When we talked about how the movie was said to offend the sensibilities of 1970. Like, no, it's just a film that offends basic human decency.
Well, it just offends my eyes. Like, it is badly shot, among other things. Like, we'll talk about the opening scene in just a minute. There's another scene where, as we mentioned, Myron and Myra have sex with one another.
Yes.
Which I take as some kind of artistic way of showing masturbation.
Yeah, except that they show that, like, it ends with... Okay, here's what happens in the scene. Myron and Myra are having an argument about her plan to break down masculinity. Then she lays Myron down on the bed and gives him a blowjob. But then there's this weird dream sequence with Farrah Fawcett's character talking about food. But, like, she's like, F is for French fries, A is for apple. And I kept waiting for it to, like, spell something, but it doesn't spell anything. She's just literally looking, P is for pizza. Like, it's, like, and then, like, there's a weird scene where they're eating a banana, but it's, like, and again, like, you think you know what I mean when I say there's a scene where they're eating a banana, but you don't.
You don't. It's just, Rex Reed taking a big bite out of a banana.
Yeah. And then it cuts back to the bed, and you would think that we would see Myra, because in my understanding of the movie, Myron at this point is imaginary, but it's Myron laying on the bed, jacking off, until we get a cut to a bottle of champagne exploding in Oliver Hardy's face.
Yes. But there's a shot in that scene.
Also, Myron interacts with other characters in this movie for no reason.
Yes, there is a character who works at the school. No, he's a student at the school. He makes sure to say Irving. That the teachers don't last very long at the school, and students stay forever. This guy is like a very obviously gay fellow who has a conversation with Myron about being gay. but Myron's not supposed to exist anymore.
Yeah, Myron doesn't exist.
And then there's a scene transition where it's Myra again.
Yeah, and about the scene at the end where Myra is hit by a car and then Myron wakes up in the hospital. You may have noticed this, and Michael Sarnan, his director commentary, is fucking lying his ass off. Rex Reed and Raquel Welch do not look alike.
Not in the least. They don't act the same. They do not look like a pre-op, post-op single person.
Yeah, they don't look like each other at all. I've seen people who have undergone pretty dramatic transformations when they've transitioned, but they, like, Rex Reed and, first of all, Raquel Welch is, like, 5 inches taller than Rex Reed.
Yes.
And their faces look completely different. Their facial structure is completely different. Michael Sarn says that they look like they could be brother and sister. Adopted, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the inclusion of the dental psychiatrist is a way to explain how different Rex Reed and Raquel Welch's teeth look. Because, like, Raquel Welch's face is, like, 40% teeth, right? Like so much of, like, her look is her teeth, you know? And Rex Reed's teeth are kind of just, like, there.
Yeah.
I feel like the inclusion of the dentist was strictly for that. But, so, back to the scene where Myra and Myron have sex with each other. There's a shot as they're talking to each other, and it lingers on this shot for a good 30 seconds of just, like, the midsection of both of their bodies while they're talking. And it's so disorienting and weird and just such a bad shot.
It really is. And that goes for, like, disorienting, weird, lingering, and badly shot is every shot in this movie. There was a part where I asked you, has anything advanced any plot in the past 10 minutes?
Yeah, it's just so... It's such a visually uninteresting movie. Like, if a movie is going to spend so much time to progress so little plot, then at least give me something interesting to look at. But this movie does none of it. And this is, I think, the way to lead into the opening scene.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about this opening scene. Have you seen You Only Live Twice? Do you know the room where, like, in the really offensive scene in You Only Live Twice where they're, like, they tell James Bond that they're going to have to make him a Japanese, and they go into this weird operating chamber that, where they give him fake eyebrows, and he just kind of squints a little bit and slouches? It's that room. It's this weird mirrored dome.
Yes.
Crossed with the last episode of The Prisoner.
Yes. There are people sitting in director's chairs watching as Myron is getting his sex change.
And they have, like, popcorn.
When the doctor, played by John Carradine, cuts off Myron's penis, they applaud.
They give him a standing ovation.
Yeah. And here's the super weird thing about that opening scene. Half of it is one lingering shot of the wall, the reflective silver wall, as John Carradine is talking to Rex Reed. And I think it's supposed to be this way of showing, like, what a distorted, weird situation. But instead, it's just ugly and not inviting to look at and off-putting. Extremely yeah. Off-putting.
There's a lady in the background of this scene with a whip. Who's yeah. just kind of swinging it around, like, and you think, like, when I say that, you think, like, oh, she's doing, like, whip tricks? No, she's got a bullwhip that she is just swinging around, like, not very well.
It's almost like the movie is saying, well, this is the kind of place where sex changes happen. You know, like, I don't get the sense that this movie...
By a man who's smoking a cigarette and swinging around a meat cleaver.
Yeah. Like, I don't get the sense necessarily that this movie is particularly judgy about, you know, gender or people wanting to be transgender or transsexual, but at the same time, it's got this weird sense of, like, only a radical would want to do it, because Myra and Myron are certainly radical, and not in the good way.
Yeah, there's not a single skateboard trick in this movie.
They have radical ideas.
And
the sex change operation takes place in this weird place.
Yeah, a fun house.
Yeah.
It is a fun house. And there's the nurse who is attending to the cigarette-smoking, cleaver-wielding John Carradine is a very distinctive-looking lady who they use the same shot of her winking at Myron three times. And then she shows up at the end to wink at Myra when she's hit by the car and is getting taken to the hospital. And Michael Sarn appears to think that that is a leitmotif, which it is not. Like, you can't just use something twice.
Yeah.
It's just...
And I don't understand. Oh, I don't understand why that character keeps appearing anyway. Because she was in Copenhagen, and then she was in L.A., and then she was in New York. Is she just following Myra / Myron around?
I don't know.
Let's talk about the satire in this movie, and I think we're done after that.
Yeah, I think I've been done.
The satire in this movie is the most basic, hey, these people are hypocrites kind of satire that you can imagine.
It is baby school satire.
Yes, okay.
It's like, literally, there is a politician?
There's a lawyer in a scene at a diner who walks into the diner and starts talking to Uncle Buck about this movie he just saw and how
it's
smut.
He walks out of a porno theater and into the diner.
And he says, all the movies I'm seeing now are smut. I've seen this one three times, and people are fornicating in it. And, like, he just keeps saying how people are fornicating. And John Huston acts a little, like, disgusted, but also interested. So the idea is, of course, that they are talking about how distasteful smut is, but they're actually really interested because they're horny old men. Right?
Right.
That's the level of satire that there is in this movie. There's another scene where...
It's the politician.
Where Buck gets arrested for something. I'm not sure what. He violates his parole somehow. And Myra has to go basically say that she'll oversee him. She'll, like, take care of him so he doesn't have to go to jail. To do this, she has to go see the district attorney? Some guy in a position of power who gives this whole speech about how, like, deviants and communists are ruining our country, right? After Myra and Rusty leave his office, he reaches over and grabs a marijuana cigarette and lights it up and smokes it. Wouldn't you know that he's also a hypocritical fella? Like, there's nothing pointed about the satire at all. It points out occasionally that people are hypocrites. And it's not even Buck. It's not even the guy who ends up getting his life ruined in the end. No pun intended. That is the one who is being shown up as a hypocrite. It's these other people. It's such a just fucking disjointed movie.
Yeah. This was a listener demand, and we did not get enough
money. You're saying?
Yeah, money.
All right, let's talk about if there are any high points of Myra Breckinridge.
I don't think there are. I literally don't think there's a single high point in this movie. There were like one or two lines where I was like, oh, that was a good gag, but like...
That it wasn't longer? Maybe?
God, how could it have been? How could it have been longer than 94 minutes? It's already padded out to that.
The only other high point I can think of is that some of the cutaway gags were funny. Like, Laurel and Hardy are funny. And so we got to see some old, funny Laurel and Hardy gags. Like,
Yeah, you know, if you ever watch any of those Laurel and Hardy movies, are you going to be able to laugh at those bits? Or are you just going to be like, oh, that was in Myra Breckinridge, and then you'll get mad all over again?
This
is a movie that ruined other movies.
That's fair. But, you know, the gag where Laurel asks Hardy what time it is after he's filled up a glass of water, and then he looks down at his watch and spills his water. Solid gag.
And the callback that they actually show later in the film, where he sees Laurel with the glass of water, and he asks him what time it is. But Laurel's wearing his watch facing, you know, like on the inside of his wrist. And so when he turns his hand, he pours the water on Hardy again. That is a good gag. That's a really strong visual.
Yeah. It's from something that's not Myra Breckinridge and has just been spliced into this movie.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is that ends with Hardy looking at the camera and going, something's gone wrong. And I was like, yeah, this whole fucking movie's gone wrong.
True.
No high points. Zero high points.
And I think we've been through the low points. It makes no sense.
I mean, the low point, the big low points are the big low points. They're the treatment of the very idea of transgender people. The rape scene is awful and played for laughs.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, even in King of Fighters, like, there wasn't a rape scene played for laughs.
There are quite a few anti-gay slurs that are used.
Very stereotypes thrown around.
I think the idea is that the anti-gay slurs are supposed to be used by people we don't like. But I don't know.
Who are we supposed to like? Who in this movie are we supposed to like?
I don't know.
Myra? The rapist?
No. The character I'm come closest to liking, even though he uses a bunch of gay slurs, is Rusty. And maybe Farrah Fawcett. Because they seem like just kind of okay, dumb people. But they end up, like, they're the targets of the most hate.
Yeah, there's, like, the most horrible dialogue in the movie is about those characters.
Yeah.
Or spoken by Rusty. There is a special low point that I wanted to point out. There's just a low point about society, which is that people used to say ball to mean have sex with, and that is the worst.
It's used multiple times in this movie. And it's
the line, I think dudes ought to ball chicks, is like, that's, don't ever. I'm glad that went away. That's the fucking pits, man.
It's distasteful.
It's bad.
Speaking of distasteful, this movie is not nice to look at all. It's badly shot. The music is forgettable at best. And, like, occasionally it goes into this, like, zany, goofy music that's supposed to mean, like a little... Yeah. But there's nothing funny happening at that moment. It's just there for no reason. The acting is, at best, passable, and at worst, terrible. Nigh unwatchable.
As we said, like, it cannot be overstated how offensive this movie is in its treatment of transgender characters and the concept of feminism. It's unbearable.
Like, I think it would be okay if there was another character that was a counterpoint to Myra that was, like, a reasonable feminist or a well-adjusted transgender person, right? But there's not. She is our only example of a feminist and a person who has had a sex change. What else are we supposed to think?
Yeah, I don't know. Bad.
This movie's nonsense.
It's garbage. It's complete fucking garbage. And I'm like, I very rarely say this, but I am glad it ruined the careers it did. Good.
I think we've already given them, but Chris, any additional final thoughts about Myra Breckinridge?
This might actually be the worst movie I've ever seen.
I have had
multiple jobs where I have had to watch bad movies. I have never seen anything that was both this offensive and this inept.
Yeah, like, the that John Huston was involved in the making of this movie, and it's this bad, is, it's breaking my brain to think about it.
That nobody said anything to stop this film.
Look, I'm glad John Huston went on to have a career. He's great in Chinatown. I'm glad it didn't end Farrah Fawcett's career. It kind of ruined Raquel Welch's career. It certainly didn't recover to the degree that it was supposed to. Raquel Welch was supposed to be a huge star, and this movie kind of ruined it. Any momentum she had. And
yeah, good.
Like, it's kind of well deserved.
Yeah.
What a train wreck. What a horrible train wreck. So listen, Robert Kelly, if your intent was to make us watch a movie that we were going to hate and then have us talk about how much we hate it for an hour, bravo. You have done your work.
This is an L. We're taking the L on this one.
Yeah, we lost. We lost this one. It's our first loss in a while. The last time we lost this bad had to be King of Fighters. And I'm willing to say this is worse than King of Fighters. There's very little redeeming about King of Fighters, but this is probably worse.
This is easily the worst movie we've ever had to watch for Movie Fighters. Like, it is a new low that I hope is never ever repeated.
So that's it. This is our Myra Breckinridge episode. I hope we're back to something that we at least tolerate on our new episode, which will be in 2 weeks. In the meantime, everybody, be sure to go to moviefighterscast.com. That is our website, where you can download the show, stream the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for Movie Fighters, the AV Club notated Movie Fighters on their Podmass feature. You can leave us a review on iTunes if you would like to. The more reviews we get, the more we're featured on iTunes, which is great news for everybody involved. And look, I'm just going to say it, because we mentioned that $100 was not enough for us to watch Myra Breckinridge. We have a Patreon for our other podcast, War Rocket Ajax. If you would like to donate to that Patreon and keep that show going, because this show is already paid for with a Kickstarter, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and throw us some monthly money there if you so wish. We have prizes and various other things, rewards that we are giving to our Patreon backers. If you love the Clitus Media family of podcasts,
which is me and Matt.
Yeah, you can go help us out there. This is taking a lot out of us. Hopefully we can recover within 2 weeks and come back with another movie. Until then, everybody, this has been this episode of Movie Fighters. We will be back in 2 weeks. See you then.
Go to hell, Myra Breckinridge.
This has been a Clitus Media production.